Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Why is Heritage Radio Network important to you?
HRN is very nostalgic to go into because it's really the only place that you have this really warm, homey experience to watch people get together and talk about the things that really make a difference.
It's really fun when I ask guests, do you want to be on Heritage? And they're like, at Roberta's? Yes, 100%.
I believe that we all are really trying to bring people together.
I think getting more people excited about good, local, well-crafted food and away from big ag and tasteless commodity food is so important.
It's kind of an honor to be sitting there with somebody in a space where so many other people have sat.
Join HRN's vibrant community of thoughtful eaters. Become a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. I'm Kat Johnson, the communications director here at HRN, joined by my lovely co-host and colleagues, Katie Mosman-Wadler. Hello, Katie.
Hey, Kat. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. And Hannah Forden.
Hello, hello, hello.
We also have the wonderful Amanda Wang in the booth, our engineer, making us sound great. Hey, Amanda.
Happy Thursday, everybody.
Happy Thursday.
I only ever get to see Amanda on Thursdays, so it always just, like, makes my day.
Me too.
Oh, thank you, Hannah.
I miss being neighbors with you, Amanda. This is the hardest
part. I know. It's weird, because, you know, like, after intern life, it's like I almost never see you guys, which is a little bit weird.
You know, you're welcome back anytime you want to rejoin that intern life, but I think the paying job life is probably a more familiar one. At this point, we are very lucky. We have some incredible guests in the studio with us today. This is our wrap-up episode.
Of the decade.
I was going to say the season, Kat.
No, the decade.
That's really dramatic.
I know, it is. Are we happy to see the decade go? Are we sad? How are we feeling?
I think I'm ready to turn the page, to start a new chapter.
Yeah.
So it's been a great decade, but also I'm excited to see what's next. How about you guys?
In the 2020s.
The roaring 20s.
Oh, are they going to roar again? Cool.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If you go to Lions Roar Karaoke, they will roar. It's a story for another
day. What happens at Lions Roar stays at Lions Roar.
Maggie
Lions
knows.
Okay. We better introduce our guests.
We have to introduce our guests because we have to talk about Lions Roar. First up, we have Maggie Miller and Randy Miller, the father-daughter duo behind Scottish King's Gin. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much.
Okay, so Maggie's been to Lions Roar Karaoke, so we're going to get into that.
Yes.
Okay, great.
We can do this whole episode just about karaoke, and I'll be very happy.
Done.
Our second guest, or our third guest, I should say, is Sarah Gray Miller, the editor-in-chief of Sever Magazine.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thrilled to be here, and I'm not sure if I'm related or not to the other Millers in the room.
Yeah, we chose our guests alphabetically for this season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're at the M's now.
Yep.
We'll get into the N's next decade. We also have our lovely co-host,
hi,
Zara Tangora of Life's a Banquet.
Hello. Happy Thursday.
And soon-to-be new show launching on HRN next year, Processing, with her mom. This is a nice little, like, parent tribute.
Yeah, there's a parental theme in the room. Parents here, parents there, parents coming, going.
and distant relatives.
Can you give us the quick plug, Zara, for what Processing will be?
Sure, yeah, I'd love to. Well, while I'm here. Processing is a show that's going to be premiering next season on HRN, and it is about the intersection of food and grief. I'm going to be doing it with my mom, Bobby, who is a grief counselor, a psychotherapist, a psychotherapist, not a psycho, and a therapist. No, she's an no amazing comment. Person. And we will be doing interviews with different folks who have a variety of different experiences with grief, whether it be and food, whether it be a first responder, someone who's lost a loved one, someone who's endured the loss of a business, you know, different kinds of really intense life transformations, anywhere that you find grief, which is actually a lot of places.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then how food plays into it. So we're very excited about that. And thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here spontaneously.
Anytime.
Yeah, we accept walk-ins on Happy Hour enthusiastically. In fact, one of the highlights of the past year was we brought in a very random, very strange, very enthusiastic gentleman who was eating at Roberta's.
Oh, yeah, Blake from Austin.
Blake, what's up, Blake?
He came up to the window very surprised and enthusiastic about what was going on in here. And I said, come on in. And he did.
And, oh, did he?
And he was like, he got on the mic right where Sarah Gray's sitting. And he was like, what is this? Who are you? What are you doing? And we were like, we're HRN. We're a food radio network. And he was like, this is amazing. We're like, who are you? I'm Blake from Austin. I sell real estate. He has the greatest business card I've ever seen in my life. It's a picture of him pointing at you. And it says, expert negotiator. No. So if you need to buy real estate in Austin, let me know. I got his card.
That was a really unique experience. Okay, we have a couple of quick announcements and headlines to get through, and then we're going to dive in with our guests. We're going to talk about Sever. We're going to talk about gin. We're going to talk about karaoke. We have some trivia. So we have a lot to get to. We're going to do our headlines super fast. I think we should do, let's talk about the drive at the end.
Okay, yeah. Deal.
Let's give everyone like a little moment. Okay, Amanda, would you just kick us off with our headline music? I just want to just talk about this first one first.
Yes.
Last night we were all super excited and jumping up and down because our other show, Meet in Three, which is just a tad more produced than this one.
It's just
a little bit slightly different style, but the other show that we make, our team at HRN Office, got nominated for Best Food or Drink Podcast by the Taste Awards, and we're super stoked.
Woo! Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we're really thrilled. We're alongside some really great company. Proof was on there from America's Test Kitchen and Milk Street. From Christopher Kimball was there, and a bunch of other really great shows, and we're just happy to be in such good company. So I just wanted to congratulate everybody. That show takes a ton of people and time to produce every single week. So we're just really proud and excited about that. Okay, so we're going to talk about a couple of headlines. Today, all of our headlines are about the end of the year and the decade. Oh my God, this is like getting me into a sweat. On the Main Course OG, Emily Pearson, Patrick Martins, and Trig Brown, their brand new co-host from Winsun. You guys know him from his delicious food. Welcome special guest and wine expert Andre Mack, another friend of HRN, to cover the best of 2019, holiday party gifts and etiquette, and curbing your dog and more. Those things all go together.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Cutting the Curd season finale brings together all three hosts, Elena Santigade, Diane Stemple, and Aaron Foster, to reflect on 2019 and make some cheese-related bets for 2020. Hijinks ensue. I don't know. Go listen. Also, Tech Bites takes a look forward with their last show of the year. Jennifer Liuzzi welcomes Bloomberg's Kate Crater to discuss top food tech trends to watch in the coming decade.
And finally, for some sort of bittersweet news, our beloved Michael Harlan Turkell, host of The Food Scene, is wrapping the show for a little while, for the foreseeable future. And so his last guest was Andrew Scrivani, who is the only person to be on the show three times. He is, he's become one of the most recognized food photographers in the field and just released a book. It's called That Photo Makes Me Hungry, and it gives the step-by-step instructions for shooting amazing food photography. And Michael Harlan Turkell, the host of The Food Scene, is also an incredible food photographer, and we'll miss seeing him every week, but wish him the very best being a new papa.
Yeah, so this is like probably a good time for me to fess up. So Michael had a baby, well, with his wonderful wife, Megan. They have Sweet Baby Gil. So if you follow them on social media, you've seen like just the most adorable pictures. So he's taking a little time to be with his family and work on some other projects. We're going to, you know, keep the food scene fiend alive, of course. But this might be a good time for me to actually tell you guys, we've been kind of dancing around it all season. I, too, am expecting a little tiny boy.
A new foodie.
HRN radio producer of the future coming soon. So this, I'll probably maybe make it to like one more episode in the new season. We'll see. I'm exactly a month from my due date right now. So I might see you guys, but I'll definitely see you guys like in a little while, Crocodile. But yeah, if you've noticed any of our episode photos where I'm like wearing these like really baggy,
holding things, a large box
behind an umbrella, that's what's going on. So anyway, I'm super excited to leave you guys in the very, very capable hands of my team. I'm taking 12 weeks of maternity leave at some point when the baby shows, and I'll be back.
So congratulations.
Do you ever put headphones on your belly for your own shows?
Play so that baby some podcasts.
You talking?
Well, apparently he can already hear me talking.
Oh.
Like right now.
I guess I don't know how that
I didn't
work.
Either. I don't know how babies work at all. But I guess they kind of get to know your voice just from being around you. But I hadn't thought about that. If I don't feel like talking and I just want him to like hear stuff, I guess I could just like play him an episode.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great idea.
Well, okay, so this brings us to, we went to karaoke on Tuesday. We took our interns out for an intern appreciation night at Lion's Roar, which is, you might have heard us talk about this before. This is a really unique place.
I don't want to do tell the world about
no.
it, though.
I mean, just maybe, like, just special. Know that, like, if you're in Bushwick, there might be this really magical place. It's somebody's home.
Yeah, I actually lived a couple apartments down, which is how I learned about it originally.
Could you hear it?
I couldn't, which is kind of the allure. You would have no idea it's there. We tried to get in for my birthday this year. They had an opening for us at 4 a.m. if we wanted
what?
To. Yeah, 4 a.m. if we wanted to stop by then. But that was it because it's booked up. So I hope no one hears this episode.
Don't go there.
I'm curious because it's the best icebreaker. What is everyone's go-to karaoke song?
Good question.
Kat, you should start because I feel like you have the most solid repertoire. Yeah.
I really like to go with Jeanine C. Riley's Harbor Valley PTA because I love to tell a story when I'm doing karaoke.
It's a classic.
Thank you. I knew you would appreciate
that. Do you also sing The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia?
No, I don't, but that might be a good one to add. I also, this past time, sang, I go old with that one, and then I went very new and I sang Loose Change by the Highwaymen. Excellent song.
I like want that to be my new one. That was so good. I mean, he had to like pull up a YouTube video because it's not like a karaoke version of that yet.
I love it. Deep cut.
It was super, yes. super cutting edge.
Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
Well, she's fine.
My, I don't know. I don't have like, I have a few, but like probably, Kat has to like do this one with me, which is, You and I, Lady Gaga, which like, despite remembering that it's really hard to sing, every time we're actually in it, I'm like, oh, right, this is so hard.
Oh, you guys kill it. That is, I had never heard that song prior to seeing you guys do karaoke, and I now have seen it like 4 or 5 times, and it is, I'm always like, get your fucking lighter out. It's happening.
Do we want to tell them about, like, who won karaoke this week, though?
Yeah.
I mean, it was an experience.
It's hard because we have a member of our team is also like kind of a famous musician. So like there's just no competition. So Jeet Paul, who is one of our part-time engineers, who is just incredibly talented at audio engineering, is also
a rock star.
An actual rock star. His band, which I feel so bad I'm blanking on what it's called, was written up in the Indian Rolling Stone this year and is a transcontinental amazing rock band, so we really can't compete with him.
No.
He's incredible. But he and Matt Patterson, our lead engineer, did a duet, which
it was Savage Garden.
Truly madly.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was
with feeling.
Yeah.
I mean,
it seems unfair. I think they should be disqualified.
But like, it was like the whole boy band thing. We were all like, we just lost our minds.
Were there dance moves?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There was like,
oh,
I have some videos caressing. I can show you later.
Please.
What about you, Sarah Gray? Go-to song?
I also like a story and a Southern hit, so I think it's got to be Tammy Wynette's D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
Mm. Excellent.
And
excellent.
It's spoken word, most of it, so you don't even really have to be a very good singer,
strategy.
Which helps.
Love that.
Pro.
I like terrorizing my friends, so... I have two go-tos. I'll only do one in an evening because I'll lose all my friends if I do both of them. Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston.
Damn.
I'm not a good singer, just to be very clear. That's always fun for me.
But you believe the children are our future?
Teach them well and let them lead the way.
Don't get me started.
That one, or I really love singing Defying Gravity from Wicked.
Oh, my yeah! God!
The entire edit, that's, I think, 7 or 8 minutes long.
You're
but
a monster.
I'm the worst. Don't go to karaoke with me.
Oh, I want to.
It's fun because I like singing. So there's Elphaba, Glinda, and then there's also the townspeople. So there are a lot of different parts to sing, and I like singing them along.
How about Randy, Zara?
Folsom Prison Blues.
Oh, wow. We have a nice theme here.
Yeah, well, anything by Johnny Cash basically would be okay.
It's low enough.
It's low enough. I can do that. The Girl from Yesterday, Glenn Frey.
Mm.
You probably don't know that song.
Oh, I don't. No.
It's an old Eagles song.
Okay, I'm going to look it up. Mm. Eagles, nice.
I really wanted to do some Eagles this time, and I just didn't pull it off. But
Hannah, you didn't say one yet, but Will has been saying he has your version of Cabaret stuck in his head.
Oh, my version.
Your version.
Like, look out, Liza.
For those of you who don't know, I have a theater background. And so, yeah, like that. I mean, I feel like my days of, like, learning every single lyric in a song, like, stopped around, like, 19. And so the only songs that I can ever think of to do for karaoke are, like, my I'm 19 and my heart's broken.
Oh, we can go in on Wicked together.
Oh, yeah, babe. So my policy is it's mostly Alanis Morissette and Amy Winehouse because, you know, I have a lot of feelings. But yeah, I like to throw some show tunes in, which I used to be scared of doing, but now I really like doing.
People love it.
We're a very supportive crowd.
Yeah, exactly. And if I've got Miss Wicked over here, yeah. I can do anything.
But also karaoke, you're in a state of mind normally where fears have left the building a long time ago.
You're doing it right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
For
yeah.
liquid reasons.
Yes, yes.
As I reach for my wine.
Yes, with the help of my friend Prosecco, I was able to give Liza a run for her money.
Totally.
Ms. Zara.
Oh, my goodness. Well, if I'm with friends and I do have people to help me, I'll do Bohemian Rhapsody. I've been known to go to Montero's and do Bohemian Rhapsody. And I also have a Whitney Houston. I like I Will Always Love You. We could either be Whitney or Dolly.
Or Dolly.
And I used to actually own a restaurant, and we would always sing I Will Always Love You at the end of the night when all the customers had left, like at least once a week. You have to sing it at the top of your lungs. So people would often come downstairs from upstairs and be like, can you please shut up? Like, stop it. Stop torturing us. Yeah, but you know. It's pretty good, and I'm going to do it right now. So, Amanda, please cue the music.
We're going to have to bleep that out for licensing reasons.
Exactly. I'll be right back after the short break.
And a one, and a two.
And we're back.
Well, the whole reason we got onto the karaoke topic was also, so this was my third time being pregnant and doing team karaoke. We go to karaoke kind of a lot, I guess. So it was my third, like, sober karaoke, which, like, actually was, like, more fun than I would have thought it would be, but, like, mostly because of my wonderful team. But, like, Matt the other night was like, are you worried that you're doing the opposite of Baby Mozart right now? It's like, yes.
Who needs Baby Mozart, though?
Yeah, so this baby, I was like, you know what?
So
no,
angsty.
The reason for this is I have to start embarrassing this kid as early as possible so like he just gets used to it. So I'm like, okay, we're like well on our way now. Like, mom is just gonna be a total embarrassment for quite a while, so just starting off on the right foot. Okay, so we're having this is our last show of the decade.
Yep.
This is crazy. Sever, as many of you have probably received in your mailboxes, just had their 25th anniversary edition, and I really I always struggle to not say episode because I'm so used to saying episode. This is the 25th anniversary of Sever. I hope that you all have received it in the mail because you're subscribed. But if you need to go pick it up, go get it.
Could you tell us about the, well, first of all, you have to tell the story of how you first started working at Sever and now your new role and what it was like to put together this compendium of 25 years.
So I'm basically telling everyone just how old I am because 25 years ago, I worked at Sever. I was not the editor-in-chief, quite the opposite. I was the receptionist and the assistant to the founding editor-in-chief, Dorothy Kalins, really about a week out of college. I was, but basically a rube from Mississippi, watching these genius editors, Dorothy Kalins, Coleman Andrews, and Christopher Hersheimer, really dream up this magazine from scratch, but in a very non-Hearst Condé Nast corporate way. It was seriously out of control. And yeah, I had a ringside seat and got to watch it and stuck around for 8 years. I went over to Sever's sister publication, Garden Design, but Dorothy was the editor-in-chief of both, and when she was delegating her workload, she forgot who was on which masthead. So I basically gave my 20s to her and this brand, and as fate would have it, I came back in August, and the first issue was going to be the 25th anniversary issue, which, I mean, I obviously had a leg up because I remembered. And I've also stayed in touch with Dorothy. In fact, she was my reference to get the job, but I didn't tell her what it was for. And I emailed her and said, I got the job. And she said, what is it? No. And I said, Sever. And then she said, wait, my job? But of course, she helped me out. She wrote a beautiful essay for the issue. Coleman Andrews also wrote for the issue. We have a feature on Christopher Hersheimer's new restaurant. And for me, I had not kept in great touch with everyone who worked there. So it was, I had this opportunity to get back in touch with all these. We called ourselves the kids because we were in our 20s back in the 90s, and we called them the grown-ups. So I got back in touch with all these women who I ran wild all over Manhattan with back in the 90s, and some in person, some lunches. There was one conference call where actually we should have gotten in touch with your mom. It wasn't a grief problem, but it became like a therapy session. Remember that time I cried in the bathroom? And so it's just been, I don't know, a homecoming, a high school reunion.
Wow. That's so beautiful. And also, I'm holding the magazine in my hand right now, and it is gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Do you want to describe for our listeners what's on the cover?
Yes, it's a carrot cake. Beautiful carrot cake. And the folks at Tartine whipped that up for us, the legendary bakery in San Francisco. I mean, if you're going to get a birthday cake, that's who you want to bake it.
I want that cake.
It was delicious. It was delicious. In fact, while they were shooting it, all the sort of pieces that didn't make it and leftover icing were there, and I just kept dipping chunks of cake into icing. It was unbelievably good.
Tough job. Someone's got to do it.
Yeah, my clothes are not fitting the way they did this past summer, I'll tell you that much.
Join the club.
Yeah, don't even get me started.
You have an excuse.
Turning food into a human. So you were at Modern Farmer for a while before.
I was.
And I'm really curious to hear from your perspective, do you think that that's going to influence a new direction at Sever, or kind of a particular emphasis, or, you know, are those two pathways kind of independent?
I mean, I think every place I've ever been probably influences who I am as an editor. Mm-hmm. And Modern Farmer, I really feel like I should have earned about 20 master's degrees because I learned so much there. But every brand is different. So on the one hand, yeah, on the other, no, but I have already assigned a story on regenerative agriculture to a writer who worked with me, because Sever was always from the get-go about going a little deeper with food and placing it in context. And the magazine, and I know this because I was listening when they were fighting about stuff, was, you know, everybody else was doing that, and they're still doing it now. How to feed a family of five in 5 minutes or less for $5 a head. And there's no connection to where that food came from. And with Sever, of course, it's more about where it comes from in geographically in terms of culture, connecting it to the people, the place that it comes from. But agriculture is part of where our food comes from, and with the very climate things are grown in and what things are grown in certain places influence, that all influences food. So it can't help but inform me, and I'm glad I'm walking into this with knowledge I didn't have mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years ago.
I think that's so important to bring to, like, the food media landscape, is an appreciation of the big picture and, like, exactly where our food comes from.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest, almost every problem I remember at Modern Farmer, it didn't matter what we were tackling, whether it was farm labor, whether it was organic certification, at the end it all boiled down to the fact that Americans pay so little for their food. Mm-hmm. And so you hit up against these, you know, catch 22. Oh, how do we solve the problem? And it's ultimately because we expect to pay nothing.
Yeah. So kind of on that note, and something I think that, you know, Sever, as a magazine that really appreciates and tells the story behind really quality food, how do you address kind of this criticism that we all face in food media of good food being elitist, or there's an accessibility problem to great food?
That
sort
actually,
of in context of the magazine.
That comes very easily to me, answering that question. Because when I got to Sever and started talking to people about it, there was this sense of, well, Sever doesn't. There was all this sort of pretension because of the fancy French name, I guess. But having been there at the beginning, I was like, guys, we put Flamin' Hot Fritos in the Sever 100 back in the day. You know, we, like, extolled the virtues of Duke's mayonnaise. And that's where culture comes in. I mean, quite frankly, my favorite food is a little something called Rotel dip. And it's a block of Velveeta with a can of Rotel. People are like, how did you make it? And I'm like, you take a can of this, you know, shelf-stable cheese. I mean, it's shameful from an agriculture point of view, but from a culture point of view, I grew up in the South.
I was just about to ask that. As you're from Mississippi, I'm from Alabama. Everything you're just talking about, to me, just, like, screams Southern culture in a way. How do you think that, like, that being your background and where your roots are, how does that kind of inform your point of view and the approach you take personally, like, as an editor?
It definitely keeps me down to earth. You can't be from Mississippi and be a snob, you know? You really can't. And it's always been, though. I've worked at so many places where someone would be like, you know, your reader lives in a flyover state. And I'm like, I basically am a walking flyover state.
I mean, you have chandeliers in Mississippi, but they're at an Ole Miss tailgate. So
exactly.
Keep it in perspective.
Exactly. So I'm always going to come at things from a down-to-earth perspective. But also, we have such a... The South and various states in the South, they have a singular culture. So I think, you know, I try to not be too Southern in what I cover. I try to watch it, mm-hmm. but it also makes me really respect other cultures, especially rural cultures.
Mm. I think that's an important thing too now, is that, like, there's such a divide, more so than regionally, it's a divide between urban and rural. That's kind of where we're at.
And I'm well aware of it, having worked at magazines, where it's like, well, you just pop down to the store and you get an aged Gouda. And I'm like, yeah, at the Piggly Wiggly doesn't sell that.
Exactly. Yeah, I was talking to my stepmom, and who was, like, trying to make, she wanted to make sushi for her granddaughter that loves it. And she sent me a picture of quote-unquote redneck sushi, and it was cutting a corn dog to look like sushi. And I was like, Annette, you have an Instant Pot, make sushi rice, you have avocado. And I was like, you could get a little, like, rice wine vinegar and, like, make it a little more sushi rice-like. And she was like, yeah, I don't know where I'm going to get that. I was like, Amazon.
The internet has helped a lot. You know,
yeah.
Growing back when I grew up in Mississippi, I remember, like, we couldn't get Guess jeans. I'm, again, dating myself, the 80s. But there was no place to get a Swatch or all those trends. And I do think that the internet is a great social equalizer, but then we all have Amazon shame from the boxes mm-hmm. and the packaging and not buying
right.
local. So,
yeah.
You can't win.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I also want to hear from our other Millers about Scottish King's Gin. We were so grateful to have this as one of our featured spirits at our gala. So thank you so much for being a part of that. Tell us a little bit about the origin story of this relatively new gin brand.
It's okay. Complicated.
It's I'll talk a little bit about it. So Linda, my wife, and I started going to Scotland 15 years ago. And about 12 years ago, found a little town in the north of Scotland, Dornoch, where we now go four times a year, a couple of weeks every time. We just love being there. It's on the North Sea. It's a beautiful place. And we were there several years ago. And I've always loved gin for years. And most people don't know, Scotland makes more gin than scotch. So,
really?
I mean, like, big brands are made in Scotland. So there's lots of gin opportunities to drink in Scotland. And so I tried a lot of them, and I've always felt like there are a lot of gins I favor, but no one that I think is perfect. And so I said, that's something I want to do, is try to make a gin, and I want to make one that I think is the best gin ever, and hopefully other people will like it. So fortunately, a lot of people have. We've gotten a lot of awards and things. So that's gone great. So we just launched this year here in New York and Colorado, because I live in Colorado. Maggie lives here in New York. And so those are our introductory markets. And this gin is not trying to be something trendy that's like forward something or some weird flavors. It's trying to...
I notice it's clear. It's not pink.
It's not. Yeah, none of that. It's not aged or anything. It's just... the best gin we
could
possibly
make. Against my wishes. That was the only thing I wanted, but he didn't listen to me.
Oh. So just trying to make this be an incredibly smooth, well-balanced gin. So it's not one... In fact, the best reaction I've had was, people have probably heard of Frasca, which is in Boulder, Colorado, where we live, always rated as one of the top 10 restaurants in the country. And the bar manager there said this is the first gin he'd ever tasted that drinks like a scotch. And I think that's the best way to describe it, because there's no overpowering flavor. There's a lot of flavor notes, from floral to herbal to spicy to citrus, all those things happening in the gin. So it's a really great, real well-balanced thing. So,
should we try it?
Yeah, we should definitely try
you
it.
Should.
Pop it.
For sure.
In the meantime, so Dave Arnold is the one who used the gin at the gala. Yeah. Maggie, what'd you think about what he did cocktail-wise with the gin?
I don't remember half of the party because I just kept going back to our booth. Not because I was biased, but because it was so good.
He made just like a what sounds basic, gin and juice, but it's Dave Arnold. So
Dave
doing like clarified grapefruit juice, and it was like absolutely perfect.
Yeah, and it's funny to be here with Sarah Gray, because I mean, I think about Mom's Pantry. Mom is also in the room. She's just the silent partner of the event.
We have a stack of these magazines in our kitchen.
Yeah, there's just a huge stack of Sevre. So I grew up with that around always. And my first roommate in New York actually worked for Sevre.
Wait, who was your roommate?
Her name's Amanda Arnold.
When was she there?
This was probably 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was old.
Well, she hasn't been there for a while.
Yeah.
You're not old. By the way. Anyway, so it's just nice to have all of these connections. And what was the original? Oh, Dave Arnold.
Yeah,
great. The cocktails were amazing. I've had a few too many.
We finally got
some. Gin is amazing. I've just got to say, I just had a sip. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
Really complex.
Yeah. I have a persistent mild hangover because I have access
Same.
To it.
Yeah.
So we were talking about farms and things, too. This is actually made on a farm. People say, well, what town's it from? It's not. It's on a farm in the Highlands. It's really out in the middle of nowhere.
Tell us more about that, like the process of making this gin, especially when you're not based there year-round.
Right. Well, it was a long journey, like 3 years and several different distilleries until we finally found someone that could make what we were after, which is this real complex gin. And fortunately, we found a place, and there's a young guy who's the master distiller who really, you know how when you meet someone and you connect and you understand what the other person's saying, and that was great, because after going through some frustrating years of not being able to communicate, it seemed like that we were really on the same page, and he got what I was after. And so like this gin has basil. I don't know another gin that has basil in it. That's one of the herbal tones that you get, and it's a, you know, offset by elderflower and rose petal, for instance. So there's a lot of things going on. And so it was great to find this little distillery that could really do what we wanted. The complicated part is it's, you know, a little still in the middle of nowhere, made by hand. You have to truck it out and ship it over to the United States. And so the costs go up quite a bit. So it's not inexpensive, but I think it's a fantastic gin.
The other complicated thing is
neither of us are Ryan Reynolds, so we're kidding.
In case you didn't know. You can't get the Peloton lady.
We can't get the Peloton lady to... I don't understand how they did it. They filmed that video. Oh, I get it now.
Just a lot of money.
I get it now. So, yeah, it's small farm, small operations... Small family. This is it right here.
This is the corporation.
Maybe Ryan Reynolds would want to invest in another gin brand.
He might.
You know?
Maybe
we're not accepting investors.
Actually, you should contact Ryan Gosling.
Or Blake Lively. Right.
A little domestic competition. Yeah.
My dream is if you go online and look at who's the biggest gin influencer in the world, Elizabeth Windsor. Oh. The queen.
Of course.
She drinks gin every day at lunch.
She also washes her jewelry gin. That's how she keeps her diamonds sparkling.
Oh, that is the most like
from gin,
over the top thing I've ever heard.
Isn't her lunch cocktail a Dubonnet and gin?
Yes.
Which I think she has
bless her heart, two
at lunch. I would be on the floor.
That's why she's lived so long.
Queen's cocktail.
Have you seen The Crown?
Yeah. I just finished the new season.
Wait, I haven't seen the new season yet. No spoilers.
I just started it.
It's history.
Yeah, but, like, you don't know who's going to be the most expressive or who's going to have the best crying scene, you know?
Spoiler alert, Helena Bonham Carter turns into Bellatrix Lestrange halfway through the season.
Yes!
You're welcome.
What? I'm piecing that together in my mind right now.
Harry Potter.
Oh. Oh, see, that's why I didn't get it. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I noticed in... this issue, your 25th anniversary, you have a thing on Unilever.
Yes.
Which is great, because we've spent a lot of time in the Netherlands, of all places. Maggie did an internship over there.
I cut you off.
We're all family.
The four of us were having lunch here to talk about the gala.
Oh.
And in walks... people from Amsterdam that I've known since I was 6 years old or something like that. And in the middle of our meal, I glazed over and just stood up and walked over to them kind of without saying anything. Right here.
But that was crazy because you didn't know crazy. That they were going to be in Brooklyn.
No, I had no idea they were here.
While you were at Roberta's. Roberta's has a crazy energy.
It's magic.
A vortex.
Yeah.
I once ran into people from Natchez, Mississippi in Chablis, France.
Whoa.
What are the chances?
Yeah. Will and I were in Paris over Thanksgiving and got sat at a communal table at a like old school French place. We heard a southern accent from the couple at the other end of the table, and that we heard them say, like, we're flying back through Atlanta, and we go, okay, where are you from? They were from Gadsden, Alabama, Will's hometown.
It's so, and you mentioned the accent, because that's what, after being in Burgundy for a while, I thought, oh, that's English.
And they're like, wait.
Oh, that's American English. And I was like, southern English. That sounds like Mississippi English. And I turned around, and I'm like, wait, I know you people.
Yeah.
Is that an oxymoron?
What, Natchez English? Sometimes. Depends on who's doing the talking.
Sometimes.
Oh, it's funny. You guys said earlier about the new decade. I'm just happy to make it to the new decade.
Aww, so I think we all are. We're glad you're here.
Yeah.
We're not quite there yet. But.
Thanks for the gin, Randy.
Wow. Yeah.
It's amazing.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Can I ask, is there like one specific format that you would recommend people drink Scottish King's gin?
Just the classic cocktails, because that's what this is so good about. Martini, Vesper, I drink gimlets a lot. French gimlets are good too.
What's a French gimlet?
Replace simple syrup with Saint Germain.
Ah, okay. Love that.
Any of the classic cocktails I think is great. The other thing I would say about that, though I do have an opinion, back when those were all created, the earlier in the century, gin was much more crude than it is now. Mm-hmm. And now it's more sophisticated, and particularly this one is really sophisticated. So I think you should really reduce those other additives to the mixture. Let the gin come through. Don't kill it with too much Campari or something like that.
I was going to say, it's good straight.
It really is.
We were drinking it this afternoon straight.
24/7.
We've been drinking for a while.
Do you have a favorite tonic pairing? There's so many tonics and tonic concentrates now. Or
not really. There are so many. I personally do like the elderflower fever tree because elderflower is in our recipe. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things about this gin is how you garnish it actually has a big effect because it's so subtle. So if you put basil in it versus a rose petal or a lime or something else. It really changes the dynamic.
Now I want to see, I mean, give me a month, but I'm going to do this, a flight of all Scottish King's gin with different garnish.
Yeah. See you there. I just did a tasting that was kind of similar. Pick part of a flavor profile that you want to bring out, and you pair it with basil or mint or lime, and you can really taste the difference, and we'll set you up once that baby is out.
We'll be there at the birthing center with your flight.
I'm ready. We need to take a quick break. We're going to think about our pairings a little bit more, and we'll be back after this.
Listen to Heritage Radio Network because, let's face it, you have really good taste. You care about where your food comes from, who made it, and its impact on the planet. Whether you're looking for an inspiring interview with your favorite celebrity chef, the latest on Dave Arnold's Spinzall, or if you want to get down and dirty with some agricultural policy, we've got you covered. 10 years in and 13,000 episodes later, HRN continues to be the go-to media outlet for thoughtful eaters, like you. And we never could have done it without the support of our listeners. Help Food Radio continue in the future and help us raise enough funds for the year to come. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today. And since you've got such good taste, we have some very cool member gifts for you to choose from. Thanks for listening and for being a part of the HRN community.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Thank you, Roberta. Okay, welcome back to Happy Hour.
That was the sound of a high five from a new project we're plotting.
Oh, I love this.
We already have the name for our podcast called Miller Time.
Miller Time gets credit.
It's Miller the champagne time. Of podcasts.
We're not.
Ooh, you're good.
Wow.
But we're the gin of podcasts.
But it'll be amazing.
It'll be funny, I'm sure.
It's going to be a hoot. Oh,
and probably drunken.
Most likely.
I'll bring the cheese dip.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, you're greenlit. Okay, we're gonna introduce a new segment on the show called Millers on Millers. And we'd like for the Millers to ask Sarah Gray Miller a question, and then vice versa. Anything on your mind pressing that you would like to know from the other?
Okay, so the first thing I want to say is I disagree with your mother. I checked out the design. I don't think it's too busy. I like.
Thank you.
How much say did you have to say in the design of this issue?
A lot. It's part of my job. That's the great thing about being an editor-in-chief instead of, well, I guess the great thing and the awful thing, right, is you're at the top of the masthead, so you're responsible for everything. And it was sort of a challenge. You know, in the changing magazine business, we now have shared art and photo departments. So there isn't a Sever art and photo department. There's a department we share with PopSci, Field and Stream, and Outdoor Life. There's one female editor-in-chief in that group. but no, I pushed and pushed, and one of the designers really got it and got on board and got excited. And we were lucky to have the founding creative director write an essay for the issue about what he thought of when he established its original look. And you don't want to do that exact same thing, but one of the designers really read it and got it and went back, at least for the special anniversary package, and unearthed those fonts and the old rabbit seal that used to be on the cover. Yeah. And did a really, I think, sensitive, fun job with it. But my mother did think it was too busy.
I wanted to say something about those cover fonts, which are just so nostalgic and perfectly set. I mean, it's just also, you guys just have to have this thing in your hands. But that the 25th anniversary font.
We actually had it hand drawn. Thank you.
It's so it's perfect.
So this the reason I asked the question. This has nothing to do with gin. My undergraduate degree is in photojournalism. I went to Missouri journalism school.
Which is a great school.
And my graduate degree is in graphic design. And so now I don't do either one.
Oh, I'm going to tell my mom a professional told me it looked good.
Plus, his whole career has been in newspaper, so this gin thing is new to us. But
we also haven't mentioned that the label of the gin is, like, incredible.
Yeah, speaking of graphic design.
So it's not a surprise that you have a graphic design background.
We got lucky because we partnered with Moxie Sozo, who's done a lot of alcohol brands, and they happen to be in Boulder, where he lives. So just all kind of serendipitous things that have happened.
I know what I want to know, and you actually reminded me of it when you brought up my judgmental mother. If you're listening, sorry, Mama, I still love you. You're just really hard on me. How is it as a, I would have an easier time with my dad, but how is it as a family business, especially one with two generations? Because I always feel I'm about to go home for Christmas. I walk in the door and I'm suddenly 16 and in trouble again. And my mom will not trust me with the photo album.
Well, I don't know how Maggie feels. It's a little easier with 2,000 miles between us, you know, so you don't get a day-to-day kind of issue. But this is the second time around because we're in the media business. Maggie and her brother, Mike, both used to work for us and both said, no, I don't want to do that anymore, and went their own separate ways. And now Maggie's back, but this time in gin. So we're second round. Hopefully it'll work, be lasting this time.
I think you made the right choice, Maggie.
Yeah. And I'm sorry that I abandoned you the first time. You've brought that up a few times today, and I feel like maybe we need to unpack that. Get Zara's mom to help us talk through our issues. But
we can arrange that.
My mom and I are essentially copy-paste human beings. So they've been married 6 years. And I think the reason my dad and I have a very easy time working together is because I'm just like her. It's great. I love it. I'm glad that it's not in newspapers. I'll say that much. So, yeah.
It's nice to have some familial lubricant like Jen.
Yeah, the pendulum swings both ways. If you have a little too much, it can get a little hairy, but if you have the nice
right amount.
Yeah.
You need the ball
middle
peak.
Ground is good.
Yeah. Well, that was an amazing new segment of our show. It's too bad it's only going to work when we have this combination of guests.
I guess you'll have to come back.
If only we could get them back on radio together again someday.
You would have to twist my arm really hard.
I can see that.
AKA, I'll be here tomorrow.
We'll bring some tonic to Lion's Roar and we'll see you there.
I
business meeting at Lion's Roar Karaoke House.
4 a.m.
Exactly.
4 a.m.
We have to get to our trivia segment, but very quickly. This show goes by so fast.
Yeah.
I just want to go around the room and I want everybody, I'm sure we've all like been doing a little bit of reflecting, but just like in a very quick sentence, not like the number one thing. It doesn't have to be like this like whole soul-wrenching process, but what's something that you are optimistic about for the next decade, for the 2020 decade?
Is this personal or global?
You pick.
Either.
Yes.
Anybody have an idea to start?
I'll start. It's political. I really hope that we're going to have a new president. and I'm optimistic.
Why? Just kidding.
Why would you want that?
Again, I'm from Mississippi, and people could be listening. So many. I worked at Modern Farmer.
You're going to love our trivia category.
I care a lot about our food system. But I am feeling more and more hopeful. I mean, I was hopeful last time around and then had to literally eat nachos and drink rosé for breakfast. I didn't go to work for a week after the election. Mm-hmm. And I am really hoping that a lot of people who took things for granted then don't take things for granted now.
That's right. And vote.
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 Please vote.
Yeah.
Unless you're a Trump supporter. And then don't.
Uh-huh. Well, we have to say, you know, the opinions expressed are not those of HRN.
Sure.
But also vote with your fork. It's really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I think I'm just in the next phase of life. So it's interesting that this decade is closing. I feel like my childhood, the sun has set on my childhood, truly, as a 35-year-old. That's stupid to say. But I'm just excited for the next 10 years because it's going to be, I think, a lot of really good stuff.
I'm still waiting for the sun to set on my childhood, as is my mother.
Does it never set?
It hasn't yet.
Okay.
I keep waiting, and no.
I mean that in a good way. I mean, I think I'll always be a child in a lot of ways, but I'm ready to grow up and start a family and buy a house, that stuff. We'll see if it happens.
So, being a lifetime journalist, actually, this is really out of nothing to do with gin, which is hopefully the next 10 years will be successful with the gin. But big thing for me in my lifetime, things are always a pendulum. They go one way, then they come back the other way. And I think the derogatory phrase of fake news and things has brought journalists into the spotlight a little bit more. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's good for us to focus on being sure that we're really true to our principles and good for it. And I think that'll swing back now in the next few years. And that's what I hope to see, that people start thinking of journalists in a positive light again. So that's what I'm mostly looking forward to.
You guys are all so smart. okay, so mine is twofold, and they are related to each other. One is personal and one is sort of global, sort of professional. So personally, so this, I'm about to enter the last year of my 20s, which feels really good because I'm ready to say goodbye. But I want to focus on community and like, I've been very career oriented for the last decade and like thinking about big picture things. And I want to like focus in on like the people and places that are important to me. And then to sort of piggyback off of that and also to get in a plug, I have really just so much hope for like what HRN can achieve in the next decade. And you heard the little drop in our break, but right now we're fundraising because we have so many stories we want to tell you in the 20s, and we need all of the support we can get. We're a small operation. Almost our entire staff is in this room right now. And we are really excited and really jazzed to like travel the country, gathering stories for you, bringing new shows to you, and it costs money. So if you're listening, please show your support. Every dollar, like literally every dollar, makes a difference. So if you want to join our community, as is my 20s, what is that called? Resolution is to build community. So join our community, become a member. It means a lot to us. You can go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate. And thank you.
Thanks, Hannah. I have to wipe away like a little tiny tear now. I'll just echo everything that Hannah said. And I'm bringing a tiny human into the world in a few weeks, and I'm pretty excited to hopefully help him be really smart and not afraid to shake things up and just informed about food and how critically important it is to, you know, not only our kind of shared human experience, but the continuation of life on Earth. Literally, it is that important. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
I feel like I don't really know a good answer to this. I just keep thinking about the fact that recently we had a record number of women elected to Congress. And my hope for the next decade is that women continue to take over shit.
Woo. Amen.
That's all.
Yes.
Dad, you're so outnumbered in this.
Sorry.
He's starting to sweat.
Sorry, Mr. Miller.
But also shout out to all the men of quality.
Hell yeah.
Because
if hell we find any, we'll tell them.
I appreciate you.
But I second the sentiment about journalism. It's like been a really harrowing time, and by no means are we doing, war reporting, but it definitely feels like it's been a harrowing time for people trying to tell truthful and important stories. And I hope that
I think it woke us up.
It
really did. I in a sort of lifestyle-y realm, Modern Farmer was a little more political, but still ultimately a lifestyle realm. And that happened. And after I did get myself out of bed and off the bottle and got to work, I felt so I felt like I was making a difference, truly making a difference, if I was talking about our farm labor program.
Totally.
And what's wrong with the H-2A visa system and how reliant we are on immigrant farm labor. I won't even go to all the bad places I could go with that, but it it really did wake me up. It made me more passionate about my job. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm not alone in that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, well, on that note, we have some very quick trivia to do.
Yeah, this is yell it out style trivia. Oh, gosh. We're all on the same team.
All right.
Blue.
No. Apropos of, I don't know, something, our trivia theme this week is peach mint trivia. It's trivia yellow. About peaches and mints. Peach mint trivia.
Just a random idea.
Oh,
this
I get
week.
It. I get it now. Peach mint.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Cocktails that would go with peach and mint. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it.
Instead
now.
Of rosé and nachos.
I'm there.
Question number one. What month is national? What munch?
Another glass of
gin. I've had too much gin.
It works.
What month is National Peach Month?
June?
No.
March?
No.
May?
Later.
July?
Later.
August.
Yes!
Woo, we won!
I know all the months! Question number two. Where did the peach come from?
Like, literally
Egypt.
Where?
No.
Georgia. The country.
Think about a... I'll give you a hint. It's a country that our current president pronounces real weird.
China. Well, that's a lot.
Correct.
Wait, how does he say China?
China.
Oh.
Oh.
Question number three.
That's on brand.
Why do peaches have fuzz?
It has something to do with water?
It does.
Assume.
Yes.
Keeps them from getting moldy?
I'm going to give it to you.
Waterproof.
Yeah. It collects moisture and protects them from rotting.
Oh.
Great job, Maggie.
Thank
wow.
you.
Question number four. Who is the world's leading producer of peaches? You've already got a hint.
Colorado.
No.
Georgia.
China.
They produce over half of the world's peaches. All right.
Weird.
Where does mint get its name from?
Latin.
Sort of.
Menta.
Yeah. The Greek mythical figure.
Oh, Greek.
Yeah.
A mythical. Yeah, I had no idea.
How many species of mint are there?
Species.
A lot.
This is a trick question.
There's catnip.
There's the specific kind that grows in Cuba that they won't serve mojitos. Am I getting this right? Yes. They won't serve you mojitos if it's off season.
Wait. What? I think this is a trick question, and there's a lot of varieties, but only one species.
No.
No.
Oh.
5.
17.
You're very close, Maggie.
18.
Yes. Wow.
Is there a score? Sometimes?
You're like a savant.
I knew it.
Maggie's winning.
Last question. What year was mint gum invented?
1912.
Very close.
1913.
Even closer.
1914. 40.
Yes. Wow. You guys won trivia.
Congratulations.
Wow.
They're
Team
the
Miller.
Trivia Millers.
Team Miller, everybody.
You should go in Family Feud. The Millers.
The Millers.
This Say branch no of the family would lose.
All right. Well, I think we have to wrap up. Get another show in the studio rolling. Thank you to Sarah Gray Miller, Maggie Miller, Randy Miller. Thank you to our engineer, Amanda Wang.
Happy end of 2019, folks.
We did it.
Amanda Wang Miller.
Oh, and Zara Tangora Miller.
Yeah, you're all Millers now.
Yes.
Hannah Borden Miller, Katie Bozeman Wadler Miller.
Oh, great. Another last name, just what I've always wanted.
And it's
you,
me,
Kat Johnson
Miller. We'll see you in 2020. I hope everyone has a happy, happy holiday season and an amazing next decade. We're gonna make it. See you then.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. and we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.